snap, gets it. Blitz coming, pressure coming. Barrett Carter getting it and sacking Rattler.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 6/10 of a second remaining.
He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Oh, what a play by Mike Williams. A touchdown of 19 yards. I mean, he put Jamarcus King on his back and gave that chicken a ride.
Free throw shooter.
Clark in a straight jacket.
Oh, he didn't need to do that. He threw it away. King Pickens.
To the sideline, caught. First down. Woo!
What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me? Hurt my feelings!
Well, there's Chase Hunter. 2 seconds, one. Launches a three. Good if it goes! It does! Chase Hunter! The three! At the buzzer! Sends Clemson into the locker room! Up 10!
A double pumper. That was a double pump shot.
That was another one from the band down by the river.
Now, let's go live to Faxon Childress and John Hight.
We welcome you in, everybody, to the Monday edition of Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hight right here on 105.5 at 97.5 The Roar. It is Monday, September 29th, 2025. We are glad to have you with us. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in throughout the course of the program today. Phone lines will be open. Adams Co. Roofing text line will be open as well. We would love for you guys to engage and join the program here in the early going. A lot to talk about after a crazy weekend in the sports world. Obviously, the college football slate was billed as one of the best in the past couple of years. I feel like it delivered, starting on Friday night with two great games between Arizona State and TCU, and then Virginia and Florida State. Carrying over to Saturday, Ohio State goes on the road, gets a big win against Washington. Oregon, Penn State provides overtime. Ole Miss, LSU goes down to the wire. Alabama, Georgia goes down to the wire. Auburn, Texas A&M goes down to the wire. Heck, even Indiana, Iowa went down to the wire with some weird bad beat stuff at the end with Mendoza taking the safety. Wake Forest got one of the biggest robberies in the history of college football to just thwart them of a ranked win over Georgia Tech. We'll break that down, but seriously, the win was stolen from Wake Forest. It's pretty irrefutable, and if you know what I'm talking about, we'll dive into the weeds on that a little bit later. Illinois marches down the field for a game-winning field goal over USC as time expires after USC pulls off a crazy comeback. Maeva goes for 364 yards and two touchdowns. Lemon goes for 151 on the outside and two touchdowns. Just wasn't enough. Notre Dame blows Arkansas off the face of planet Earth, and then BYU took care of Colorado in the nightcap. Gosh, Caden Salter, not a good player at QB for Colorado in the slightest. So if you want to check in on any of that and more, 654-ROAR is the number. We would love to hear from you here on a Monday morning. Also, a lot going on in the world of the NFL. We'll break down the slate there. We'll get into that. And apparently, we have our halftime show for the Super Bowl this year, and it's going to be Bad Bunny. I'm not really sure how I feel about that. We'll field some opinions from you guys in the audience on that as well, but definitely interested to hear thoughts on this past weekend. Texter gets in and says, was it just me or did the first 2 days of the Ryder Cup remind you of Clemson football this year? A lot of hype for the U.S. team, but Europe just wanted it more and their leaders stepped up. Yeah, to be honest with you, 844, I checked out of the Ryder Cup after day two. I just wasn't satisfied with the effort from the United States. It was a lopsided scoreline, and to be candid, I don't care enough about golf to watch a blowout if the United States are getting blown out. So that's kind of what was transpiring when I decided to check out. And I saw that they made it a little bit more competitive and a little bit more respectable, is my understanding, at least down the stretch. But ultimately, it's not good enough. And it hasn't been good enough in a long time for the United States as far as level of care and level of passion for this competition. So it just is what it is. Yeah, I don't have a ton of thoughts, a ton of comments. Another texter gets in and says, our fans were an embarrassment. I saw that as a pretty frequent complaint, to be honest with you, throughout the course of the weekend, at least regarding the Ryder Cup. And it was definitely something that was interesting to see. again, I'm not the biggest golf guy in the world. I did play 18 holes this past weekend for like the third time in my life. I'm trying to get more into it, but I'm not educated enough about the world of golf to know like all of the nuances and all of like what went wrong for the Americans. I know that Patrick Cantlay can't make a putt. I picked up on that this weekend. So even for a casual, I definitely know that much, but definitely an uninspiring performance by the Americans, to say the least. And hopefully they can find a way to get that sorted out going forward, because that was a disappointing feeling. Texter gets in on the program, says, soon we'll have to rethink the entire continent versus single country idea. Don't want to sound like a sore loser, but they're obviously better than us on paper. I think there's a lot of truth to that, 394. I do think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think, you know, from an objective standpoint, the concept of an entire continent competing against one singular country does seem lopsided. But then again, like, it's not like the United States hasn't won this event before. So Texter gets in and says, U.S. golf and U.S. men's soccer getting embarrassed on the national stage. Yeah, I never thought that my care and level of interest for the 2026 World Cup would be so low, but here we are. Another Texter gets in and says, no need to get more into it. Don't let the rest of the station brainwash you into the golf cult, LOL. Yeah, I mean, it's not really anything to do with anybody else at the station. A lot of people watch golf. Like, both my parents watch golf. My grandparents watch golf. So I was definitely raised in a golf family. It's just never necessarily been my thing. We'll bring John in now here on a Monday morning. 654 Roar if you want to check in. John, how was your weekend? And were you tuned into the Ryder Cup at all?
Weekend was great. I tuned in mid-afternoon when the window felt like it was open. Until the putt that was made that officially closed it, and then I moved on with my day. But the parts that I did consume were it was fantastic. You hate to lose, obviously. It was nice to even have something to cheer for, because when trying to follow it Friday and a little bit Saturday morning before the games got going in the college football world, you know, I was paying attention to it, but they didn't seem to care at that point in time, so I wasn't going to care. But then, hey, give credit where credit is due, man. Like, when Cam Young did what he did, I was dialed in from that point on. When he sank that putt and took it on 18, yeah, I was dialed in for a little while. It was very good. I enjoyed it.
And again, like, I just didn't necessarily... Like, I don't know a ton about golf, but I did see the line and was like, why is Europe the underdog here? I did not understand that for the life of me, why the Europeans were underdogs to the Americans going into this one. Again, I'm a casual. I don't pay a ton of attention. I think they have better players, and I know that they care more about the event than the United States cares about the event. So, shout out to the Europeans, 15-13, despite a really nice comeback on Sunday, right? You enter the day trailing by 7 points. Okay, here's one more thing I'll say. And this will be the last thing on Ryder Cup before we shift gears to college football and NFL. Was it Victor Hovland that opted out? Why is he allowed to get half a point for his team by opting out via injury? That rule has to change after this year, correct? Like, we've got to find some way to change that rule to where a full point is still available for both sides.
I'll be honest. The Ryder Cup scoring has always, I've never, and like, part of it is on me to have not really taken a ton of time to get into it. It's more of the, just tell me what I need to know as I'm watching the broadcast. And I thought that the broadcast actually did a very good job of that yesterday, like trying to, the Michael Scott quote, explain it to me like I'm five. I would take that question tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 a.m., right here on The Roar with Mickey Plyler. He can give you a much better answer than I can.
Yeah, that's fair. Texter gets in and says it has nothing to do with playing a whole continent. We have to play better. Bradley didn't set the course up correctly and admitted it afterwards. A small percentage of fans were an embarrassment, but at the end of the day, Europe cares more, puts a ton of resources into this event. Ever since we crushed them in 2021, they put a ton more into it. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Another Texter gets in and says, historically, the home team wins. Away has won 7 times now ever. And Texter also says, hit one good iron and you might get hooked. I think I'm hooked already after this past weekend. I actually played pretty well, like, keep in mind, pretty well for my standard, which is like very low. Have never walked on a golf course before a month ago. But yeah, no, definitely enjoyed myself this past weekend. Another Texter getting in and said, the people crying about the continent of Europe versus the USA are uneducated. It's essentially the same size as Europe. Some of our states are bigger than their countries. I've heard the argument before, and it's so stupid. Again, I don't really personally know enough about it to argue or to take a side in that. the United States should be winning and the United States needs to play better. That's probably my main takeaway here, is regardless what the competition is, I'm always going to back the fact that the United States has the resources available and has the players and talent. It's just about applying that and executing. So clearly, if you're able to make up 5 points on Sunday in singles, you're capable of winning in general. It's just they didn't show up on the first couple of days and had a couple bad breaks. And be fair, like, again, I don't know a ton about this, but all my friends were telling me that Team Europe was hitting some insane shots on the first 2 days. Like, those guys were playing out of their mind well, and that there was some cooling off period coming, and that ended up transpiring. It was just a little bit too late for the Americans this past weekend.
John from Liberty said something there in that text. People crying. And I understand that the Ryder Cup carries a lot of emotion, and I'm glad that we are all patriotic and proud of our country. But I want to talk about people crying in Athens, Georgia, in Baton Rouge, down on the plains, in Happy Valley, in Tallahassee. I want to talk about crying all over the country from college football.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of tears. And guess what? We didn't really have to shed any because we didn't have to play this weekend.
No,
it was great.
We did not. Where would you like to start in this crazy jam-packed weekend of the college football? Actually, let's start.
Could we start in Raleigh lost to interim coach Philip Montgomery and the Virginia Tech Hokies?
I owe a texter an apology who asked me if they're an outright, like, you know what? Hand up. I should have known that the interim coach boost was going to happen. I should have known this. And I should have known that if there was anybody to lose to an interim coach, it was going to be Dave Doran. So whoever texted that in, please get back in with us today at 654-ROAR and give us an I told you so moment. Tarion Stewart, the running back for Virginia Tech, 174 yards on 15 carries. Hokies go on the road to win 23-21.
Turns out the Bowling Green transfer was somebody they could have used when Brent Pry was still the coach.
Yes.
His first game action of the season.
And by the way, they won a one-score game. So if you don't think that was a head coach directly correlated stat, I think you would be wrong.
Talking about, you know, crying in places. We could talk about both Knoxville and in Starkville. I'm sure Tennessee doesn't feel great. I'm sure they're happy to come out with a win. I mean, it was in Los Angeles. A lot of crying there, if they care. Pittsburgh, not in the pro side.
How did Pitt blow it?
Syracuse, Wake Forest, how did you blow it? I mean,
how did they blow it? And then again, like, is the ACC officiating crew on the field standing directly at the line of scrimmage just literally blind?
They were doing across the league what Aaron Rodgers did yesterday during the tush push by the Steelers when he stood 8 yards back from where the play was actually happening and just signaling first down. He looked like a Clemson fan standing in the concourse just signaling go after a first down.
All right, let's actually start with the disaster in Raleigh, and then we're going to have to end up taking a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll hop into all this slate madness. 654-ROAR if you want to check in.
Also, Arkansas, they lost their coach and lost 56-13. Like, tears everywhere, man.
There's
all across
everywhere.
The country.
I've got some numbers for you, okay? I've got Dave Doran's track record for 13 years at NC State, because I think a lot of people use the Dave Doran thing where it's like, oh, well, he's won 8 and 9 games a bunch of times, and oh, he's the winningest coach in program history, and look how he's elevated the floor. At some point, enough is enough, all right? These are the 13 years for Dave Doran at NC State. He's 3-6 in bowl games, which are his only postseason games. He is now 5 games under 500 in ACC play. Not the SEC, not the Big Ten, not a league with, you know, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia. No, ACC play. He is 48-53 as a head coach in ACC play. 48-53. That's not good enough. 7-25 against ranked teams in his career as the head coach at NC State. He's 4-9 while playing ranked teams at home in Raleigh, and he is 12-8 while ranked against unranked teams. Has never eclipsed 9 wins in his 13 years in Raleigh. It's time, man. It's time. Not because of this game specifically, not because of this season specifically. At some point, people serve their purpose to their program. Dave Doran has served his purpose at NC State. He has elevated the floor. He has established a level of consistency. He has established to a certain extent and degree an identity of what Wolfpack football looks like. It's time to go. It's time to go.
Do you know what year he got the job?
Well, 13 years. I'm not a genius by any means, but what, 2012, 2011? Something.
Was it the
11-12 season?
Yeah, 11 or 12. All right, so you want to know why he still has the job? To me, it's pretty simple. He's like 8-3 against North Carolina.
Yeah, they do fare well in those rivalry matchups outside of the Wake one for whatever reason.
Right. But when it's time to play the heels, Dave Doran delivers.
Yeah. He beats North Carolina.
Outside of, I mean, they've won four in a row, ended Mack Brown. I mean, they've been dominant against this team. It's to your point of why is he still here. I don't disagree with you. Listen, I can't stand the guy. I'll go help pack the moving truck. It's not going to hurt my feelings. You say bad things about Dave Doran this morning. But the man owns North Carolina.
He does.
And so I think that's when you go over like the body of work, that's a huge reason why he is still there on the job. I just wanted to at least be fair and point out that caveat.
Yeah, no, he definitely has owned that rivalry. In totality, I think NC State fans deserve a little bit better and they deserve a little bit more, which is a weird thing to say because I don't particularly like NC State or their fans. But yeah, it's just super disappointing to see the rug kind of pulled out. And, you know, to be honest, the writing was on the wall in the first three games. You sneak by East Carolina. You get a couple wins where you, like, lose on net success rate, but you actually win the football game, which is always a big red flag for me, where it's like, okay, you got outplayed by just about every metric, but you did find a way to come out on the right side of the coin. And then these last 2 weeks, the rug's been pulled out from them, and they've been exposed for what they are. And now the Virginia Tech Hokies, with an interim coordinator, or with an interim head coach that was their coordinator, and a loss to Old Dominion in blowout fashion on their schedule, are tied for first in the ACC. I love this sport. I love this sport so much. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get into the Friday night slate of games first because, John, you got a victory lap to take to a certain extent. You talked about this game all offseason.
To a certain extent because I wasn't brave enough to pick it.
Correct, but
I will own that part of it.
You did talk about this being an important one, and Florida State, you know what? I got to give Florida State a little bit of credit here after the break. They could have quit early, okay? They got in a hole. They could have quit early. I still think that this is a very, you know, resilient group in comparison to last year's group that quit three games into the season. And I do think FSU is going to end up being pretty good. But, man, Tony Elliott, the Hoos, there's a path to the ACC championship game alive in Charlottesville if Tony E can take care of business. We're going to take a quick break here on the program. We're going to talk some Florida State, Virginia, amongst other big-time matchups in the ACC, SEC, and more with Faxon and John right after this.
Attention, listeners. Are you ready to drop up to 20 pounds or more by the new year? At PhD Weight Loss, they've cracked the code with the Metabolic Reset System, and it helped me lose 67 pounds in only 26 weeks. The PhD plan helps you burn fat first, not sugar. No starving, no risky drugs, no endless workouts. Just a smarter system that resets your metabolism. And for radio listeners only, they're making the deal even better. They'll waive your consultation fee. You'll get 2 extra weeks of the program for free. They'll even cover the cost of your food during the program. And just for booking, you'll receive their 5 Steps to Reset the Scale book for free. But don't wait. This guarantee and bonus package is only for the next 25 callers. Give them a call today, 864-644-1900, and mention code New Year. That's 864-644-1900. PhD Weight Loss. Reset your metabolism, lose the weight, and keep it off.
Hey, 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 it's the Queen of Clean here at Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. Give us a call at 864-238-8800. We've got your portable toilet rentals, hand wash stations, luxury restroom toilet trailers, septic tank services, and holding tanks. So whenever you need to speak with the Queen of Clean, call Royal Flush at 864-238-8800.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber.
Anyone know a good plumber? It's an emergency.
One Tom Plumber will be there in an hour, or they'll discount your bill.
In 1 hour?
Yeah, just dial the number one, then Tom Plumber.
That's their name.
That's their number.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber.
Have you considered the legacy you'll leave behind for your family? The staff at Green Law Firm is here to help you create a legacy you'll be proud of. The best time to plan for the future is now. Whether it's a straightforward will, power of attorney, family trust, or another option, David Green is here to guide you in choosing the right path for you and your loved ones. Call today, 864-271-7940, or visit greenlaw.legal so he can start planning your family's legacy together.
Carolina legends aren't born. They're handmade in Bo's Real Southern Kitchen. We marinate our chicken for 24 hours in a blend of bold Southern seasonings. Then we hand bread and fry it to crispy, juicy perfection. And that's why they call us the Carolina legend. It's Bo time.
Greenville has a long mattress manufacturing history going back to 1931 when Orders Mattress Company was born. Today, the fourth generation of the Orders family is still making some of the best mattresses in the U.S. Visit Engineered Sleep's one-of-a-kind mattress showroom on Pleasantburg Drive, across from Krispy Kreme, and find your next mattress. Enjoy free in-home delivery, a 100-night sleep trial, and of course, a great night of sleep. Visit EngineersSleep.com.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit CantyCanFixIt.com.
Guns, guns, guns. It's the Great American Gun Show at the Civic Center of Anderson. Buy, sell, trade. Guns, knives, ammo. Weapons of all kinds. Bring your guns. Tell your friends. 9 to 5 Saturday, 10 to 4 Sunday. 3027 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The Civic Center of Anderson.
Hey, it's Desmond Howard. You want to win the weekend? It all starts with the tailgate. And for me, that means Kingsford Charcoal.
They've been bringing the flavor, the smoke, and the heat since 1920. No wonder they're still the gold standard of grilling. So fire it up, feed your crew, and let the smoke do the talking. Kingsford, the king of the tailgate. Get it today at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Live and local sports talk coming to you from the Upcountry Fiber Studios.
This is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar.
Serving the five counties of the South Carolina Upstate, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back into the program. Faxon Childress, John Hite, continuing with Facts on Sports live on a Monday morning here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. We're going to continue to unpack a crazy weekend in the world of college football coming up now. All right, let's hop right into it. Let's start on Friday night. We were talking a little bit about this FSU-Virginia game. Virginia takes the cake in double overtime, 46-38. Number one, what a game. Just starting us off on Friday night with an absolute banger were Tony Elliott and Mike Norvell. Virginia got out to an early lead. Florida State came storming back. It was dead even at halftime. It was dead even in the second half, and we needed two overtimes to decide who the better team was. But Virginia prevailed by eight. Sage Enos, former Clemson tight end, caught the first touchdown of this game. It was good to see him get into the end zone and have some success. Tommy Castellanos really did everything he could. He had a bad interception on the RPO early, but he was able to bounce back, and he was the leading rusher for this team. Also threw for 254 yards, that game-tying touchdown pass. Chandler Morris kind of had a similar night where there was some good, some bad, and some ugly. Two touchdowns through the air, added another three on the ground, also had those three interceptions, but again, it was a game where neither team was overly sharp. There were some mistakes, but it was a good one, and Virginia prevailed. What were your just kind of initial takeaways, John, from this one up in Charlottesville, and Tony E notching a signature win for his Hoos?
This game is one of the reasons why you don't like, or why I tend to avoid the transitive property of college football, because Florida State blew Alabama off of the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball in week one. We saw Alabama, I think, win the lines of scrimmage between the hedges Saturday night. And then we saw a Virginia team without its two best offensive linemen win the line of scrimmage against Florida State. So Virginia would be the best lines of scrimmage team in the SEC. Like, that's why the transitive property thing's a little screwy. That was my biggest takeaway, was Virginia being able to hold their own in the trenches on both sides of the ball. I thought they won the battle up front. When you didn't have your starting center and they lost their best offensive lineman in the preseason, their left tackle, who could have been an all-ACC type of guy, and you're able to push Daryl Jackson and those guys off the line of scrimmage like that, tip of the cap, man. Tip of the cap, Des Kitching. Something I never thought I'd say on these airwaves. I thought he was great. UVA, what a cathartic moment it was for that program, that university, after all that they've been through since Tony Elliott's been the head coach. You know, with the tragedy on that campus and, you know, that seat being incredibly warm, I thought was, in a weekend full of great environments, about as good of a one as we saw across the sport. Chandler Morris, he's a dog. Jamari Taylor, he may be one of, if not the best running back in the ACC. He's certainly up there. He didn't have a great day, but I thought he gave them exactly what they needed from a complimentary run game standpoint. They were flying to the football. They were fired up. And I did not. I was surprised at how well both of those teams settled in the second half after as crazy as that second quarter got.
Yeah.
I thought that thing could have gotten into the 60s on both with both teams the way they were scoring in that first half.
And I know Florida State's the top 10 team and they were favored. I do think some credit is due to Florida State for battling back and getting up every time they got punched to the mouth in that game. Like, I get it. They lost. They deserve to lose. Virginia was the better team. And they deserve to win. Florida State last year would have quit in the second quarter and packed their bags and gone home. And that game would have gotten, that would have been 46-3. It wouldn't have been 46-38 in double OT. They would have quit early. Castellanos leading them down the field at the end of the game to tie it with that ridiculous touchdown pass that Pittman somehow brought in. That was electric. Overtime, I thought, was electric and super fun. Like, this was just one of those where you were glued to your seat through the entirety of the game and grateful to be able to watch it. And then, obviously, poor Squirrel White, as he just got flash mobbed at the end by Virginia with that field storm, which was crazy. But
also, tip of the cap to the three Virginia defensive backs who made sure that nobody touched Squirrel White.
Yeah, no, I mean,
those
that.
Guys, like, basically creating a huddle over him.
Yeah. He would have got stampeded.
Tip of the cap to those young men. But you know what? It also exposed some of the questions we asked on Friday. What does Gus Malzahn and this Florida State offense and everything look like when you're not up a whole bunch of points and then you're just able to run the football? There's holes and flaws in this scheme and this game plan.
Yeah.
And I thought Virginia did a very good job of exposing that.
When I look at Florida State, I guess I thought that the defense was just going to be better. That was my main takeaway. We knew Virginia was going to score. That was the read on the game, right? Like, I think I picked Florida State 41-28, something like that. I didn't know that they were going to give up 46 points to this Virginia team. 440 total yards of offense, 6.4 yards per pass, 4.4 yards per rush. Like, Florida State's offense was more efficient than Virginia's, but Virginia got the timely turnovers, and they also got those turnovers. Look where they were on the field. Like, Castellanos threw a pick on, like, the 5, right? That's a game-changing type of turnover when it happens.
I also think that, and my hand up here because I picked Florida State to win and cover, like, I think that we thought they were more of the reason for the success in week one against Alabama than it was the Alabama offense trying to figure itself out.
Yeah.
Because as we saw again Saturday night, Ty Simpson's a baller.
He played really well.
Like, I think a lot of that was just the disjointed nature of not having Jam Miller and trying to figure out how to create a running game on there. And you give credit to Florida State in that spot. I'm not trying to say that this Florida State team is awful by any means, but I think Virginia exposed a lot of things about this Florida State team that I know Miami is very excited about.
I came into the game and I said that the number one key in this one was time of possession, right? And Virginia had a chance if they got an early lead and they could, you know, at least tread water in time of possession. Well, they won time of possession. That was the biggest. Jamari Taylor had the hardest earned 99 yards on 27 carries you'll ever see. He ran hard. He ran violent. He fought for extra yards. He picked up multiple crucial third and fourth downs on the ground for this team. And while the stat sheet is not the most explosive thing in the world at 3.7 yards per carry, I thought he was the key to winning this football game because it allowed them to play that true style, as you said, of complimentary football. If they didn't have those 211 yards on the ground on 48 carries, they had zero chance at winning this game because when they got in a little bit of trouble was when Morris started to have to be a drop back passer consistently, right? And those Florida State pass rushers were pinning their ears back in third and long. But when they were able to run the ball on early downs and get it to third and short or third and manageable, that's when Morris could use his legs to extend plays and run for first downs. That's when they still had the option available to give it right back to Jamari Taylor and put the football on the ground to run and either make fourth down manageable or pick it up on third down. So I thought that was the ultimate key to this game that I didn't necessarily see coming. I knew Morris was going to be able to put up stats. I didn't know it was going to be five total touchdowns. I didn't expect Jamari Taylor to be as efficient on the ground, and I didn't expect Virginia to run for 200-plus yards. They won the game because they ran for 200-plus yards, and they won time of possession. They kept the ball out of that dynamic offense's hands enough to win, and Tony Elliott deserves a heck of a lot of credit for that game plan, man. He coached his tail off.
Jamari Taylor may be the most underrated player in the conference. I love this point by Texter 2062, got on the Adams Co. Roofing text line, 654-ROAR. Virginia made Florida State try to beat them with the pass, and that's a recipe for disaster for Florida State. Yeah. They dared them.
Yeah.
They dared them. And if I'm a defensive coordinator going against Florida State the rest of the year, I'm daring Thomas Castellanos and Gus Malzahn to create a passing attack. I feel pretty good about my chances. I'm not saying they won't get theirs, and that you know Castellanos is going to average 80 yards passing on this season. But we know they can run the ball well. But man, if you can slow that thing down, put them in some second and 10, third and 8, I feel great about my chances against this offense.
Another thing I thought Virginia did well, while Florida State did run for 256 yards on the ground, the rushing attack from running backs, they didn't give up big explosives. That's been the big thing, was big explosives and chunk plays. Sawchuk goes 17 carries for 74 yards, and Kroma goes 12 carries for 63 yards. But again, it wasn't something that killed you, and it was a bend-don't-break style of defense. And you know what happens when you don't give up those explosives and you make big tackles in the red zone? You give your defense a chance to pin their ears back and go and force turnovers. And that's the ultimate takeaway of this one was, yes, Morris did throw three interceptions, and Virginia did have those three turnovers, but the placement on the field in which the turnovers came was significantly more devastating to Florida State. They were going in to try and extend their lead one time when Castellanos threw that pick. It was early. It was a big momentum shifter. Then Castellanos ends up throwing another interception that got batted at the line of scrimmage. So there were just some things that did not break Florida State's way in this game, but Virginia went and took the game. That was my main takeaway, was they went and took it, and they deserve a lot of credit. So shout out to Virginia, shout out to Tony E getting the job done, and now they're 2-0 in ACC play with a very advantageous path the rest of the way on their schedule. Obviously, I don't think it's super realistic to expect them to go undefeated or anything along those lines, but there is a path there.
Why not? Why not? Let's do a little Virginia win game. The 4-1 Cavaliers right now, who really should be 5-0 if it wasn't for a horrible thrown ball in Raleigh. They're at Louisville this week.
That's going to be tough.
I like Virginia right now.
Right now, I do like Virginia. Yeah. That's going to be a tough one, though.
Washington State.
That's a win.
At North Carolina.
Should be a win, yeah.
At Cal.
The travel element there is going to be weird.
It could be, but if we're just looking at these two teams, Virginia's a better team.
Virginia's a better team than Cal.
Wake Forest at home. Virginia's a better team.
Should be a tough game. I think Virginia's a better team, yeah. And then at Duke's going to be tough.
I think it's going to be difficult, but based on what I saw, if they were able to just do what they did to what is a top 10 team, I feel pretty good about my chances there.
Don't ignore the last game on that schedule, though, because that's an ownership.
It's an absolute ownership, but who's going to be playing for the Hokies at that point in time? Like, can Philip Montgomery continue to rally the troops for the next 2 months? I have my doubts.
Yeah.
So, who's to say that Tony Elliott and the Virginia Cavaliers are not playing Miami or Georgia Tech in the ACC title game? Because guess what? I didn't mention either of those two teams on their schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah.
The biggest obstacle has been conquered.
Looking into this weekend, I do think that Louisville game is going to provide some challenges, but I want to talk about that Louisville game because I don't think Miller Moss is very good at all. And they were very, very fortunate to go up to Pittsburgh and get a win. I mean, Pitt... What is Narduzzi doing? Like, Narduzzi's going to get
blowing himself... Blowing 17-point leads?
He's going to get himself fired. Seriously, I said that in the preseason. Narduzzi's going to get himself fired at this rate because that's inexcusable. And then they have a 7-point lead and like a fourth and medium around midfield, and your defense has given up 20 points all game, and you go for it? I'm like the most aggressive guy on earth in those go situations. What are you doing? Punt the ball. Make Miller Moss, who's trashed, have to take you 90 yards down the field. Like, I didn't get that for certain. Let's talk about these other two Friday night games, and then we'll shift gears to some of the ranked matchups and the matchups in our contest. Did you catch Arizona State TCU late night on Friday night?
I tried the best that I could. I couldn't make it to the end of the game. It was very hard, but after Florida State, Virginia, it was about time to go to bed.
Yeah, I can't blame you. It was a fun one. Arizona State took the win over TCU 27-24, went down to the wire. Weird stuff happening at the end. Hoover ends up throwing the game, losing interception. And then I was up till like 2 in the morning like a psycho watching Oregon State, Houston. Oregon State had arguably the worst choke of the weekend, man. I felt bad for those guys. They went from up 14 to tied within like 4 game minutes. And it was like one of those chokes that was like, oh no, they're about to lose it in regulation, aren't they? Well, they ended up forcing overtime and still lost it in overtime, 27-24 to Houston on the nightcap there. So Fritz and Co. get it done out on the West Coast in Corvallis. We're going to take a quick break here on the program. 654-ROAR is the number. And when you guys check back in on the other side, we're going to be talking a little Oregon and Penn State. We're going to be talking a little Alabama and Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss. 3 ranked matchups that all delivered bangers this past weekend. A 6-point win in overtime for the Ducks. A 5-point win over his daughter's boyfriend for Lane Kiffin. And then Alabama takes business between the hedges. And 7-1 now is the record for Alabama against Kirby Smart coach Georgia team. So crazy that Kirby's 1-7 with that only win coming in the Natty. Quick break here with Faxon and John. More on the other side.
No matter where you begin your journey or how long you stay with Tri-County Technical College, they support your career path from day one. Their enrollment process is seamless, and their experts are available to help you find the balance you're looking for. Tri-County offers financial assistance tutoring, health and wellness resources, career planning assistance, and more. They're nationally ranked and in the top 1% for successful transfers to 4-year universities. Visit tctc.edu.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of 2 national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
When you need to move, choose Tiger Moving Company for an affordable and stress-free experience. Our team of capable, trainable, and professional movers is dedicated to providing extraordinary customer service. Whether you're relocating across town or across the state, we work hard to ensure your move is seamless. Let's start your journey today. Visit tigermovinggreenville.com and discover why we're the best choice for your next move. Voted best in the upstate for the past 7 years. Tiger Moving, the easy way to move.
Hey, this is Coach Dabo Swinney. On the field, I know the value of a strong game plan, and in life, I know the value of a strong connection. That's why I'm an Upcountry Fiber customer. They've got the fastest, most reliable internet in the upstate, backed by local folks who are committed to excellence. Whether you're streaming the big game, working from home, or keeping your family connected, Upcountry Fiber is the best play you can make. Visit upcountryfiber.com to sign up for service. Upcountry Fiber, the winning team for a stronger connection.
Serving delicious meals at a fair price for over 50 years, Wendy's commitment to good done right is unwavering. For decades, they've served up great deals to feed the whole family. And nowadays, they're bringing you breakfast favorites. The Pretzel Baconator, the Biggie Bag, and you can't forget the Frosty, all available to order in the palm of your hands with the Wendy's app. Doing the right thing in the right way is the Wendy's way. Download the Wendy's app and visit your local store today.
Why shop Reed's Jewelers and Haywood Mall? Let's start with a state-of-the-art 21st century showroom. Add to that an elegant selection of Swiss watches for him and an exquisite portfolio of diamonds for her. Need more? Award-winning sales professionals providing world-class customer service. All backed by a family-owned company in business for nearly 80 years. Just a few great reasons to shop Reed's Jewelers. Haywood Mall, next to Belk. Online at Reeds.com.
It's time to give your lawn the attention it deserves with Carolina Top Dressing. Is your fescue looking thin? Our expert fescue overseeding service paired with aeration is just what you need. But here's the secret. Without top dressing, much of that precious seed goes to waste. Why? Because seed needs soil contact to grow. At Carolina Top Dressing, we make sure every seed finds its place, whether it's in the aeration holes or covered by our premium top dressing mix. Don't let your investment go to waste. Visit CarolinaTopDressing.com to book your service today.
Everyone knows that Low Country Male is the best place to go for low testosterone and ED treatments. Did you know they also offer NAD, BPC, peptides, and GLP-1 programs? The best thing about Low Country Male is it's a one-stop shop to get your testosterone up. Our concierge plans start at just $220 a month and include testosterone, lab work, physicals, unlimited doctor visits, and much, much more. We've been making men men again since 2016. 8 locations in South Carolina and Savannah. LowCountryMale.com.
At Koala Insulation of Greenville, we specialize in spray foam insulation, the most premium insulation option to insulate your home while also sealing any air leaks. Spray foaming the roof deck of your attic can also get you the opportunity to turn your attic into usable space and is the ultimate pest control solution. Right now, you can receive up to $1,050 in rebates from Duke Energy and get up to $1,200 in federal tax credits. Call Koala Insulation today, 864-867-1779.
The Roar, now offering great sports talk around the clock. We are The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
We welcome you back in. Facts on Sports with Faxon and John continues right here on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Phone lines and Adams & Co. Roofing text line remain open here on a Monday morning. So a couple people are getting in on the Adams & Co. Roofing text line. I feel like during the Kiffin Denners, Lane is going to say something like, pass the beans, losers, what Tiger Hartley says. That's great, Tiger Hartley. Yeah, there's definitely going to be some bragging rights on the line there with all the lore in Oxford between Whit Weeks, Lane Kiffin, Landry Kiffin, the whole family there. But I do want to start in Happy Valley because, man, what a game this was. Oregon goes on the road to Penn State, number 6 team in the country, playing number 3 in a Big Ten clash, your classic Big Ten clash with Oregon involved, right? But in all seriousness, Dante Moore absolutely balled out when his team needed him the most. His Ducks took it home 30-24 over the Nittany Lions, and this was just a game that I felt like Oregon controlled from start to finish, right? At one point, this felt like a domination, just to be honest. I mean, you look at the total yardage at the end of the game, and Oregon's got 424 yards to 276 for Penn State. They were more efficient on fourth down. Penn State was 3-for-3, where Oregon went for it 7 times. Love that aggression from Lanning. They're willing to go out there and die with their offense on the field, and I always respect coaches that do that. But more yards per rush, more yards per pass. There was a point in time where Oregon was almost tripling Penn State's yardage in this game. And my biggest takeaway from this is just, man, Penn State is nowhere near what they were billed to be in the preseason by many. And what I mean by that isn't the quality of football team in totality. I still think the defense is really good, and Knowles has done a pretty good job transitioning a lot of that stuff coming over from Tom Allen, who was there last year. This was supposed to be a team that was going to gash everybody in the country on the ground. Mentioned before the week that I was picking Oregon because Penn State hadn't dominated the teams that they were supposed to dominate on the ground, and they were really only getting 4 or 5 yards a pop when they should be getting 6-7 against your FIUs of the world, right? They played nobody for 3 weeks. They didn't look great. They didn't look dominant. And you look up at the scoreboard and the stat sheet at the end, John, 4 yards a carry again for this Penn State team that's supposed to be the best rushing attack in the country. So the trenches play just has been nowhere near as good as anticipated for Penn State, and Oregon took it to them. I mean, I think this could have been ugly if this were played in Eugene, but resilient win for Dan Lanning's group, even with a inspired comeback effort to force overtime from Penn State, but a much-deserved win in totality for Oregon, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Drew Aller was good for about 12 minutes of game time. The rest of it, he was bad. This is one of those games that I don't even need a box score. I don't really need stats. You punted from the 36-yard line, and it went into the end zone. So you gained 16 yards in a must-win situation.
Yeah.
This was a I normally don't like to engage in the big game James Franklin discourse. I think some of it's a little overblown. Not in this game. Not in this game. I think, where were the wide receivers? Where was the money that was invested to those guys? Trevor Peña, where were you? But to me, as much as it's fun to pile on James Franklin, and I know upper management will do so at noon, I'll kind of save some of that for him. To me, this game was about Dante Moore.
Yep.
Dante Moore being up there with Fernando Mendoza as the best quarterback in the country. I think those two are playing the best ball right now. I think it was DeCorian Moore finally having a coming out party, if you will. I think this is Will Stein more or less showcasing why he needs to be a very high phone call if you're in Stillwater or in Blacksburg or in now in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Somebody please take that guy, in all seriousness. Please take them away from his unlimited money and elite quarterback play.
And I think part of what happened at Penn State, and I think we'll see the guy, but then again, the schedule's not incredibly difficult. They're still a playoff team. They're very talented. I think from the top flight guys at Penn State, it reminds me a little bit of what we've seen at Clemson. There was compensation, and I don't think anybody got better, the ones that were the highest paid. Outside of denied Dennis Sutton, that man's a monster. On the offensive side of the ball, I think Allen was much better than Singleton here. I don't think either back has been special so far this year, although I think both are very talented players. I think Drew Aller is giving me just kind of Cade Klubnik vibes right now. He has hit his ceiling. And I think that you were seeing a lot of people around him just kind of be like, all right, kind of done with the experience. I was glad to see James Franklin handle the moment, I think, better. He wasn't fighting and shouting at fans on his way out of the building. So that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
The Whiteout was an incredible environment, but that doesn't win you, at the end of the day, it doesn't win you football games. Dante Moore was I think he's the best player on the field.
He was
Saturday night in that game.
James Franklin now 1-15 against top 5 opponents, 4-21 against top 10 opponents, 15-30 in general versus top 25 opponents, and 4-17 versus Michigan and Ohio State. Not good enough. Not good enough. And similar to John, I'm not really a Franklin ripper, especially for the narrative, which does get overblown to an extent at times.
It's fun.
It is a fun narrative, but at this point, you just are what you are, right? We have enough of a sample size to where we know that these big games are not going to be won by this coaching staff in Happy Valley. And this program has kind of just plateaued as to what they can become under his tutelage, in my opinion. I just don't know if anything's ever going to change here. And said on the kickoff show that I would have kept Bo Pribula if I were Penn State. Looking like they made the wrong choice right now.
To be fair, when did they have the opportunity to make that decision?
They had the opportunity to make that decision in the offseason. They could have said, there are guys coming back.
When Bo Pribula left.
Yeah.
Bo Pribula bounced at the end of the Big Ten title game. He wasn't there for the playoff. Pribula forced their hand.
He didn't force their hand in the slightest. They went with Drew Aller as the starting quarterback. He was going to start in the playoff, and the messaging was that there was not going to be a competition for him to start. He had to look out for himself. I'm not mad at Bo Pribula for making that decision.
I'm not either, but I'm not going to come out here and say that they made the wrong decision in the offseason when there wasn't an option to make that decision in the offseason, is my point.
It was an adjacent decision to the offseason. A technicality doesn't matter. They had an option between the quarterback. They saw the quarterback every single day for multiple years, and they chose the wrong one. That's the point here. They chose the wrong one. It is what it is. Objectively speaking, they chose the wrong one. And there's no turning back now. There's no time machine. There's nothing they can do to redact that decision. Bo Pribula went. He said, am I going to have an opportunity to compete for this job in the offseason? The answer was no. He left. He made the right decision. Their team is better than Penn State. Missouri is a better football team than Penn State, and Pribula is a better quarterback than Drew Aller. And this is... with Aller specifically, this is what I said before this game and why I picked Oregon as well. He's never had to win his team a game. There's never one game where they have won the game because of him. He has never gone out there and been the difference maker or been the game-changing type of talent that he was billed to be throughout the course of, we're turning to the fact where everybody wants to rip Cade. I think Aller's been more disappointing in totality than Cade Klubnik has. Just in all honesty. This is a guy that has eclipsed 220 passing yards zero times this season. The four games are Nevada, FIU, Villanova, and Oregon. And he got two overtimes to get there against Oregon and completed 14 passes. He has more than 20 completions one time this season against that caliber of competition. His completion percentage is 63% against that level of comp. 16 of 29 against Villanova, 19 of 33 against FIU. I'm out on this team. I'm out on this team, and the only reason I was ever in on the team in the preseason was the expectation that the lines of scrimmage were going to regress. Texter got in and said there's a lot of similarities between Clemson and Penn State and Klubnik and Aller. I have a hard time disagreeing with that with the way that things have played out this season. And I think there's a lot of similarities from the perspective, too, where the lines of scrimmage were returning a ton of starters and a ton of production from this team last year, and they've just not been anywhere near as good as they were last season. So
I guess the big difference for me between those two is the effort that Penn State gives versus the effort the Clemson players give can still get Penn State to the playoff. If Clemson gives the effort that they gave the first four games, you're not going to a bowl game.
That's very true. That is very true. I agree with that. And I got to get Penn State did fight back into this game, and Aller made a really good throw down the stretch to help get him back into it. But Andy Kotelnicki tried to go to the well one too many times on that wheel route concept, and Oregon lurked it. Like they were expecting that concept to come on the far side. They read Drew Aller's eyes perfectly. They made the big time play. They won the game, and they deserve to win the game. Let's get Gamecock James in here on the phone line, 654 Roar. James, good to hear from you. How we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well, man.
Boy, Beamer ball just keeps rearing its head, doesn't it?
Are you talking about Vanderbilt?
No, I'm talking about the Carolina beating Kentucky with the two turnovers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you. Sorry. I thought you said Vanderbilt for some reason. South Carolina had a good win this past weekend, but there's still a long ways to go as far as identity goes, in my opinion, on offense. But, yeah, you were expected to beat Kentucky pretty good, and you roughed them up pretty good. I still got some worries about this offense, man. Like, you got to find a way to establish a run game. I didn't realize that Matt Fuller was going to be the lead back in this game, but he gave you a little bit of juice, I guess.
We found something there, yeah.
Good win for South Carolina.
We definitely can't run the ball. We got to do that. We got to get better at that. Yeah. But these next five are going to be crucial. We got to steal one somewhere to have a chance at 6-6.
Yeah, they're at LSU, Oklahoma at home, Alabama at home, at Ole Miss, at Texas A&M. Good luck. Yeah. Goodness gracious. That's five of the top 13 teams in the country in this week's AP poll that South Carolina has in their next five. So going to be challenging times on the horizon, James.
Yeah. What about those Packers, man? I tell you, they should have won the game, but you got to give Dallas credit. They hung around, and it was a great game. But
It was a great game, and I think the Cowboys are just going to play the same copy-paste game over and over again this season, right? Like, Dak's really good. The offense is really good. They've got nobody on defense with a pulse, and they're going to get lit up by pretty much every team in the league with a good quarterback. That's what Jordan Love is, going for 350 yards almost and three touchdowns last night. We got to get rid of the tie rule in the NFL, James. Nobody wants to play that much football, watch the game for that long to get to a tie. But, yeah, the Packers did a good job of at least not losing last night.
Hey, I don't understand. I haven't picked up on this new rule with the when they kick off. What is it on this? Some of them kick it short. Some of them kick it end zone.
Yeah.
What is the rule on that new rule?
So there are multiple different rules with the dynamic kickoff in the NFL depending on what the result is, and you don't want to kick it all the way through the back of the end zone because that gives more advantageous field position, to whereas if you can land it in the landing zone and force a return and or land it in the landing zone and have it trickle through to the end zone but not go out of the back, which would result in them going on the 20-yard line instead of the 35, there's a bunch of different rules around it. I think it's the dumbest thing ever personally, but it just is what it is at this point, and people that get compensated a lot more than I do have come up with different strategies and expertise at the NFL level to try and give themselves an advantage. The team that's the best in the NFL that does it right now, James, is the Panthers. Unfortunately, they suck at everything else, so at least they have that going for them.
What is the best thing to do?
the best thing to do is to hit a low line drive knuckleball into the landing zone at the feet of the ball carrier. It gave the Eagles fits 2 weeks ago when the Rams did it, and the Rams and the Panthers have been the two best teams at pinning teams back, and they both go with that strategy with the low knuckler. The risk that you run by that is if you miss the landing zone by even half a yard, which is what we saw on Thursday Night Football with the Cardinals kicker, you're going to get penalized with field position as a result of that. So there is a lot of strategy that goes into this, as weird and dumb as it sounds, and it's created a new dynamic to the game. But what you're seeing is a lot lower yardage totals from a lot of these quarterbacks, because there's a lot more drives that are starting with more advantageous field position. Like, they're more drives start closer to the 40 than the 20 now in the NFL.
Yeah. Oh, another thing, I don't think Wake Forest should have gone for two that quick. Do you?
I think they made the right decision. I mean, the game shouldn't have been, game should not have been played. The game should have already been over. If the correct decision was made, then the game was over. Like, that Georgia Tech objectively was in the neutral zone when the ball was already moving, and the game was, like, the game should have been over. But yeah, I get the whole notion of, like, oh, you don't go for two when you're at home. I disagree with that. I think when you're a two-touchdown underdog and you're a program like Wake Forest that's desperately searching for momentum in a signature win, you've got one play from the two-yard line. If you offered that to any Wake fan on planet Earth before the game, one play for the win, they would have all taken it. Now, the play call sucked, and Ashford did the wrong thing, but they made the right decision, James.
Yeah, I think, but they were guaranteed a second overtime if they just kicked the extra point.
They were.
That was my point.
They did it. It is important to remember, though, James, Claiborne was the one that got him in the end zone, and he suffered an injury on that play. So I do think that that was an element, too. If they would have kicked the extra point and had to go to the second overtime, they would have been out without their running back, who had like 125 yards and two touchdowns. So that does have to play a part of the decision as well.
Hey, has anybody found that Virginia player yet?
Yeah.
He got trampled. Right? You couldn't see him.
Goodness gracious, yes. Hey, James, we got top of the hour break. Thanks for checking into the program, man. Thank you. So, yeah, John, a lot in that phone call from James, but anything else to add on his comments in general?
It was an impressive win by South Carolina. This game doesn't deserve a ton of airtime today, so we can knock it out in about 30 seconds here. Did what you had to do against an inferior opponent. Turns out once Kentucky got done with the scripted stuff, they didn't have much left to provide. You did what you were supposed to do against the worst team in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, Kentucky's really bad. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk a little bit about that GT game on the other side. We'll also get Knowles fan and Noah in here on the phone lines. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in with us. Phone lines and Adams Co. Roofing text line remain open on Facts on Sports here with Faxon and John on a Monday.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 1560.